All right, everybody, I appreciate y'all checking out the intro episode last week on Booking the Territory Pro Wrestling Podcast and our Smoky Mountain Wrestling recap and review shows that we're going to dive into. This is the, I guess, quote-unquote, official kickoff of the episode recaps coming up that we will be doing myself and Doc Turner. Hopefully, we'll do it every week, but if not every other week, well, we will walk through each and every episode of Jim Cornette's great promotion. I will think it's the last territory, Smoky Mountain Wrestling. It's such a great, great promotion that it was and everything that they did. I call it the best promotion that no one, that many may not remember, at least in my eyes. But anyway, so one of the things I don't point out in this episode, as we recorded this about a month ago, as it is airing on September 5th of 2016, is that I didn't mention that I would play the promos that we discuss in the different comments that you may hear throughout the episode from whether it's the announcers or the talent cutting promos or Jim Cornette's promos. I will put them at the end of the episode. So after Doc and I review and recap this episode, you will hear the promos, and hopefully I can do that on each and every episode, put them at the end so you can enjoy them, at least the audio of them, after you've watched the walkthrough. Watch the episodes on YouTube. So again, if you want to watch along with us, check out the YouTube channels. There are a couple out there that have all the Smoky Mountain episodes on there. So just search Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and I'm sure you can find them. Other than that, let's kick things off, and we will get to episode one of the Smoky Mountain episode reviews and recaps, brought to us by Jim Cornette many years ago, and now Booking the Territory Pro Wrestling Podcast walks through with you and recaps them all.
Wrestling fans, from Greenville, South Carolina's Memorial Auditorium, welcome to another action-packed, exciting hour of Smoky Mountain Wrestling, professional wrestling like it used to be and the way you like it. I'm Bob Caudle, and on this week's program, you're going to be seeing such outstanding stars as White Lightning, Tim Horner, Fantastics, Bobby Fulton is going to be here, as well as Primetime Brian Lee. And Mysterious Black Scorpion also is going to be here, fans. We'll be talking with two managers. We'll be talking with Ron Ward and also with Jim Cornette and with a commissioner, Smoky Mountain Commissioner Bob Armstrong. Our big main event, Bobby Fulton of the Fantastics against the Russian Bear, Ivan Koloff. And what a match that's going to be with. And here to help me call all the action, none other than the Dirty Dutchman himself, Dutch Mantel. Dutch?
Well, first of all, I'm here to see, hold it down out there, I'm here to see Ivan Koloff and Bobby Fulton lock horns in this ring right here today. And I'm wondering, they've been talking about this guy called Primetime Brian Lee. Well, I'm going to get my first look at him today, as will all you fans, and I'm just going to see what Brian Lee's got to offer here.
Fans, it's going to be a great hour. Stay with us. We're about ready for the action. Let's go to the ring.
All right, fans. Doc Turner's back with you. I brought along Mike Mills. He's riding on my back trying to weigh me down. We're going to welcome back to Smoky Mountain Wrestling. We're going to call it wrestling here. This is the episode where we're going to get into the first two shows, the actual debut of Smoky Mountain on TV. We're going to go through those episodes and point out some things we like, talk about some things, poke some fun at some stuff. Mike, how you doing today?
I'm good, man. I really enjoyed the first episode we did a few weeks back on Smoky Mountain Wrestling, our debut episode. And I actually forgot to do one thing. I wanted to tell the good listeners out there who listen to our show weekly, whether that's on Booking the Territory, our staple show, or our Smoky Mountain show, to when you're listening to Smoky Mountain Wrestling Review with Booking the Territories, guys, use the hashtag for discussion purposes, hashtag SMWRASSLIN, and that stands for Smoky Mountain Wrestling. So from now on, man, whenever you're checking out the Smoky Mountain episodes and you got some stuff for us, I know you usually use the hashtag BTTPod, but for Smoky Mountain, use hashtag SMWRASSLIN.
But I forgot to say that, Doc. So, and then I got some other plugs, if you don't mind, if I may jump in.
Well,
real quick.
By all means, please.
Okay. So, everybody out there, please make sure you check our Pro Wrestling Tees store out. That's www.prowrestlingtees.com/bookingtheterritory. Check us out. I appreciate it very much. Also, and get you a t-shirt or two. Also, go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/bookingtheterritory. Like the page. Tell us what you think of our review shows there. And then follow us on Twitter. That's at @BTT_podcast. And subscribe to the show, man. I'd really appreciate it if you subscribe to the show. All of our episodes, including the Smoky Mountain show and including our Thursday night shows that we're doing, where we talk about WWE, you know, a little bit of TNA, a little ROH, you know, Raw, SmackDown, all that good stuff. And we have tons of great interviews with guys like Eric Young, the One Man Gang, Sam Houston, you know, so superstars from the past and many from the present. Warbeard Hansen, we talked to him recently as well. Check all those interviews out on our staple show that drops every single Thursday night at 10 p.m. Central Time. Subscribe to the show, Podbean, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, however you get your podcast from, check those out, and we'd appreciate it. And 5-star reviews on iTunes and Stitcher, that would be very helpful. All right, Doc, that's enough plugs, man. Let's get into the show this week, where this week on, you know, our Smoky Mountain Review Show, we are recapping episodes 1 and 2 of Smoky Mountain when it hit the airwaves.
Well, all right. So there's something important that I think you have to know as we get into these episodes. And the first thing is that these episodes aired in early 1992. So we talked about the fact that last time that the promotion ran in 92, 93, 94, and then ended in 95. So the first episode aired on February 1st, 1992. But these matches occurred several months prior, about 4 months prior, in late 1991. So The best estimation here is what? Corny was shooting matches to sell to TV to get them hooked, to shoot a pilot, a couple of pilots that get everybody on board. So, you know, what's the limitation of that in your mind, Mike?
Well, from what I saw, he recorded them at the end of 91. So, you know, and you got to remember, this is a different time period, too. At that time, it wasn't as bad of a thing to record, you know, at least a few weeks, or you could record 2-3 months in advance. You know, word wasn't going to spread because you didn't have Twitter and all that shit that you got now, or Facebook, you know, where social media would make things go viral. But at the same time, there's limitations because you're shooting pilot episodes for a TV program. So you really can't book what you would consider your core, you know, core angles of things that would come. So, I mean, because there's a lot of people, as you know, that showed up in Smoky Mountain much later on that are nowhere to be found on the first few episodes. So that's where your limitations are.
Yeah, yeah.
You can only do so much from an angle perspective if you're shooting a couple of pilot episodes. And so he probably kept it basic with the people that he knew he would have for the pilot episodes, which we see. Because like you said, some of these things that happen on episodes 1 and 2, they pretty much evaporate after episodes 4 and 5.
And I say
that right?
Because if you – yeah, absolutely. And so I say that because if you watch these two episodes and you say, God almighty, this doesn't do it for me, the thing I would say is that wait until they get into the high school gyms, wait till they get the angles going. It picks up after that. But this is shot for TV, and so, again, you don't want to commit to something, big angles that then fall apart once you get secure your TV, because you got to remember, at the time they're shooting this – they don't know when the TV is going to happen. It ended up being 3 or 4 months, but it might have been even longer in that day. So, again, these shows kind of stand alone on their own. They get you kind of into it, but it changes quite a bit once they get up and running and on TV in a regular way. So,
yeah, so what Doc's saying in a nutshell, bear with us. The first couple of episodes, if you're watching them on YouTube, and if you need to find them on YouTube, we probably should have told you that on the last episode we did. There's a couple of different feeds, but if you just search Smoky Mountain Wrestling, on YouTube. I think you'll find there's a couple of people who've posted the Smoky Mountain shows up on YouTube. So that's just search Smoky Mountain and you'll find them there. I forget the exact name of the people you need to subscribe to, but they're all there. So keep in mind what Doc's saying. That way you can kind of look along or watch along with us. But the angles aren't elaborate, but they do get much, much better as we get into it. So go ahead, Doc. Take it over.
All right. So episode one, they shoot the pilot episodes at the Memorial Auditorium in Greenville, South Carolina. So the first thing that I thought is that Greenville, South Carolina certainly seems like a southern town, but I've heard of it before. Some of these towns they go to, I've never heard of before. I did some looking. Greenville, South Carolina had a population of about 58,000 people in the early 90s, and also the metro area had 400,000 people. So we are not in Bucksnort, Tennessee for the pilot. They're in a sizable big city. They're in the Memorial Auditorium. This was an arena that had a capacity of 7,500. We'll talk about that in just a second. And it also held matches in Jim Crockett Promotions for the NWA in the 70s and 80s, mostly on Monday nights then. But that building was imploded, just like we do to all of our old sports buildings, in 1997. Capacity is 7,500. How many people would you say roughly were in the crowd for these matches?
For these first two episodes? It's hard to tell because it's dark, but I bet you it was about 200.
Okay, I would have said closer to five, but okay.
It's hard to tell. There's, you know, it's dark. You can kind of see you can see the fans on the floor, but see, I can't tell from where the hard camera is if there's fans back there. So, I wouldn't say any more than 300, but you know what? I mean, I may look back at it and see.
Most of these shows are going to be anywhere between a couple of hundred, 300 people up to. There are shows that they ran at certain points that had it up to almost 4,000 people. So, there's some small shows. Those and there's some big shows, and just like any other promotion, they're working their house shows, and then they have these big events along the way, kind of like pay-per-views, except they didn't have pay-per-view. So anyway, the first thing you should notice, and I certainly noticed the first time that I sat down and watched a Smoky Mountain episode, is the intro music. So you got any? You're not the music guy here, so I'd be interested to know what your thoughts were on the intro. The theme.
All right. So like I was saying, the theme music, the theme music to me, I like it. It's got a classic feel to it. I like it. I like it, man. I mean, the theme music to the show was okay.
The thing to me is that it's classic territory wrestling intro. They show some action. They show the definite keyboard, upbeat keyboard music. The one thing you pointed out to me that I thought was interesting and to take note is that in the original logo, that's not really what that's kind of what South Carolina looks like, but not really.
It's hokey.
So I just wonder who drew the states there, because there's something off there. But
somebody with two disability checks.
Aw.
I should say that's a joke, everybody. Go ahead.
So we're here on February 1st, 1992. You get a shot of the ring. You get Bob Caudle. Oh, man. So our announce team here is the play-by-play guy is Bob Caudle. Your color commentator for episode one is Dirty Dutch Mantel. They hit the tagline of the wrestling the way it used to be and the way you like it. Then Bob Caudle says, "Welcome to another exciting episode of Smoky Mountain Wrestling. The only problem there is that this is the first and inaugural episode of Smoky Mountain." So a little bit of issue there, but what are your initial thoughts of our commentating team of Dirty Dutch and Bob Caudle?
Well, I don't have anything to say about the intro because, I mean, they were doing that for the TV, so it was shot as a pilot. So when Bob says that, he's assuming that, you know, they're going to go into that would only be an issue for the first episode. However, Dutch and Bob are wonderful, and we see it first in the very first match of Smoky Mountain Wrestling with Robert Gibson and Killer Kyle from Hell's Kitchen, New York. Now, would you like me to explain to the people what was so great about that particular, commentating from Bob and Dutch in that match?
Yeah, just a second. I mean, I really do think, that there is a sort of a Mount Rushmore of announcers that came from the South in that 70s and 80s. And it's Gordon Solie, it's Lance Russell. You can put JR on there when he was with Mid-South. And then I think Bob Caudle belongs on there. So those other guys had moved on to do other things or had passed away. I think Bob Caudle was probably an inspired choice here. God Almighty, he's still alive today. I thought he was 100 years old back then, but he's still alive today. He really is awesome on some of the angles later on. Just his stuck in the past kind of ways really is fantastic here. And then Dutch is a quick wit. For those of you who don't know Dutch, that would be Zeb Coulter on the WWE these days. So the We the People. That's Dutch 25 years ago. He's also the guy who gave Stone Cold Steve Austin his name of Steve Austin because there was already a Steve Williams in the business. And Dutch has long been valued for his mind and how to get things done in the wrestling business. And so he's really, really valuable on color commentary for the first couple of years here. So back to your point, we got Robert Gibson. We've got a guy that I was not familiar with until I started watching these that was an independent wrestler around the South and Killer Kyle. So these guys get it on, Robert Gibson. So what did you pick out of the first match from our commentating team?
Oh, well, the thing about Kyle that I didn't know who he was either, but then doing some research, Killer Kyle, he had actually some time in WCW, and he was a pretty much a mildly successful wrestler, a journeyman wrestler back then. And, it's a shame because, those are guys like him. If you could watch him in a ring, he wasn't bad. He was a good little wrestler. He was a good wrestler. There's only so many household names that there are. And he came around, it felt like in a period where, the territories were dying. But I could have seen a guy like him that have been much more successful. However, the more important thing here was Dutch and Bob Caudle in this match, who about midway through the match, they get into a conversation where Bob Caudle is talking about, does Dutch know why they call Ricky and Robert the Rock and Roll Express? And Dutch wants to know, if they were singers or something. And Bob Caudle starts answering and says he heard them one time with their rock and roll band talking about the Rock and Roll Express. And because of that, the fans still chant rock and roll wherever the rock and roll go. So Caudle says it drives the opponents of the rock and roll nuts because of it. Dutch then says, yeah, well, they released a record one time that once went plywood. In the first 3 weeks, it sold a total of 75 copies and was on the verge of going sheetrock. to which Bob Caudle chuckles and gets back to the action. If you listen to it and watch the episode back, it's kind of funny because that's just the first of many instances where Bob Caudle, he just doesn't have a witty response. He's perfect for the role, but he just chuckles and gets back to the match.
Bob Caudle is the perfect straight man for all of the shenanigans that go on throughout right. Smoky Mountain. So,
right.
A couple of things that I thought interesting here was we think of in early 90s, you think automatically Robert Gibson, Rock and Roll Express must be past his prime. He doesn't look bad here. I mean, you actually wrestled with Robert Gibson at one point. Are on cards with him. How does he look to you?
He doesn't look any different. I mean, this is 91. When I met him was in 96 and wrestled on same cards as him in a couple of indie shows in the New Orleans area and on the Gulf Coast because he lived in Pensacola. And he looks the same as when I met him, 5 years later. There's an interesting story. Gibson would never remember this, but I was on a trip with him. When I first got into the business, I was in a van with him and a couple of other wrestlers. Ricky Morton wasn't in this van, and we rode up to Virginia, And I can't tell you some of the stories that Gibson told me in his van, but let me just say this. Robert Gibson, his personality, as far as the way he cuts a promo, does not come across as in how funny of a guy he actually is when you talk to him. From his promos. Now, in the ring, he's got a lot of personality. But his promos, as we'll see on Smoky Mountain, he wasn't the promo guy. There was a reason Ricky Morton was the promo guy of the two. But, yeah, man, Gibson, he still looks good to me. I mean, he had just come off a knee injury, but he still looks good.
Well, and here's the thing to remember is we think of them as being in the heyday in the 80s, but he's only 33 years old here.
Right, he's not old. So he's 33. I'm 40 right now. He's 7 years younger than I am right now, and you look at him and – yeah, but, you know, that's one of those things, too, where you grew up watching somebody. They always look older than maybe what they are because he doesn't look 33 there. He looks older than 33.
Right.
At the same time, he had been around the territories for that point for a very long time. He had been working since the 70s. So there was a lot of miles and a lot of tread on the tire by the time you saw him at 33 years old.
Yeah, so I don't know what order this happened in. I mean, this is the first match on the first show. It doesn't mean that's the order that they went in and in on the actual night in the arena. But Killer Kyle got absolutely zero reaction from the crowd coming out. He's doing a really, really bad mafia character here. He goes through a couple of iterations during Smoky Mountain. But, boy, he didn't get the crowd going with that gimmick. And he's not terrible in the ring either.
No, he's not. He was a journeyman pro wrestler. You know, he was trained properly, and you watch him, he's technically fine. There's nothing wrong with him. And he just was one of those guys that, like, when he made his debut was when the territories were dying. So, you know, like Rod Price would always tell me, once the territories died, it was very hard for people to you know, own their craft. And because Rod has always told me that, Rod Price would say, it's like, you missed it. He's like, you just missed it. If you'd have came along maybe 10 years, probably, but 15 years earlier, you would have had a chance to, you know, work 7 days a week, twice on Sunday, and you probably, not that you would have been a millionaire, but you would have had a chance to better yourself. I just think a guy like him, and I forgot, I Googled Killer Kyle. I forget when he exactly got started, but he missed the peak of the territories, and that hurt a lot of guys like him who were really, really good wrestlers. So, yeah, he came out to zero reaction. I don't know if the people really knew who he was. He came out with a violin case, which is so Southern wrestling, you know, because it's like, what's it? And back then, you know, it's like, what the fuck's in a violin case? You know how it goes. You see, he comes out with that gimmick. So, hey, that's one of the things that made Smoky Mountain great,
thing,
though. So it was a
one thing here that's interesting to note is that as they get going with the promotion, Mark Curtis / Brian Hildebrand, he's your referee for just about everything. He is not the referee here, so apparently he hadn't come on board at this time. But just something as a guy who's gone ahead and watched a lot of it, it was really interesting to not have him in the ring for this. Gibson does get the pin, short match.
3 minutes and 11 seconds.
Gibson
gets the
Gibson
pin.
Looks fine in the match. You know, he's going to be sort of floating around for a while, and then some things happen that we'll get to, and, you know, he picks back up into kind of the status that you're used to for a guy in the Rock and Roll Express. From there, we get a promo. We get an interview with the Fantastics. So we've got... I guess I didn't know this. I had always thought the Fantastics were Tommy Rogers and Bobby Fulton. This is actually Bobby Fulton and his brother Jackie Fulton. Did you have any? It was a pretty boilerplate quick interview. Did you have anything here?
The only thing I had was that Bobby and his brother come out cutting a promo on the Koloffs. Were they cutting a promo on the Koloffs at that point? I thought they were. I mean, even if they weren't, it's so 1980s classic stuff right here. But Bobby, this is the note I had. Bobby has a multicolored rayon shirt on with some stonewashed
jeans.
Yeah. And his brother Jackie Fulton is looking very dapper with his Z Cavaricci's on.
You could crush him ass with that get up back then.
Dude, that get up back then, they were lady killers. You could bet your ass on that. That's the only thing I had of note there was the garb that they had.
All right. From there, we go to a promo with Bob Armstrong, who is your commissioner for Smoky Mountain Wrestling. And he is, well, he's dressed quite, I don't know. How would you describe this?
Well, the only thing Bob is missing is a pocket protector and a short sleeve button up plaid shirt. Bob is the
he's built. You can see. I mean, he is built like a brick shit house for his age because he's probably in his early 50s here. But he's wearing a plaid short sleeve shirt with a goddamn tie.
He's got a plaid short sleeve shirt buttoned up with a tie. He's the commissioner. He tells us how he's going to bring back wrestling the way it should be and the way you like it. And he begins to talk about the fines for foreign objects and for throwing people over the top rope. Doc, you had this in your notes too on this. How quick does this this family friendly fine thing evaporate for
us? Yeah, he says it's going to be the territory will be family friendly for as long as he's here. Well, we'll try to remember to revisit that because he gets, you know, there's some angles where I don't know if family friendly is how we're going to go, but that it doesn't matter. I don't need my wrestling to be family friendly. That's
as a tease. You mean the Kevin Sullivan thing wasn't family friendly?
There's Kevin Sullivan. There's later on some other folks. So yeah.
Okay.
But Bob Armstrong will be your kind of lightning rod figure of the authority figure, good guy. He was, you know, him and his sons had been in that area for years and years and years. He's the face of a lot of that. The Armstrongs in the area are kind of like the Von Erichs here. They're really tied to that area. And so he's super over as a good guy. He's the guy you can trust. He's the long arm of the law, blah, blah, blah. Next match, we've got Primetime Brian Lee, who's very young here, with Barry Horowitz. Barry Horowitz. What did you have here?
Very underrated. Barry Horowitz, to me, just one quick comment. It wasn't a long match, but people would just gloss over Barry Horowitz. But he was a hell of a wrestler. Everything that Barry Horowitz does in that match is crisp and clean. And it's really a shame that a guy like him never reached, you know, a higher status than he really did. Because he was an excellent professional.
He's
wrestler.
Way better than Brian Lee here.
He is not only way better, but you just watch him. Everything he does is crisp. It's clean. It's amazing when you watch Horowitz. Amazing when you watch him. He was so much better than anyone would ever give him credit for.
So much Brian better. Lee, and this is something else, is that for me, I first saw Brian Lee in ECW, and he had looked like the biker. He was also doing some stuff in WWF where he was, the fake Undertaker. But he does not look like that here. He is young. He's a big dude. And he's got a haircut like, I don't know, a Lex Luger-ish Danny Spivey kind of haircut. He doesn't have any tattoos. He's a big, young, good-looking guy, blonde. You can see what the promotion is doing. They kind of push him out as the face of the promotion at the beginning. And you could also see why, but you also see that he's probably not quite ready for it.
Well, I mean, you got to remember, too, back then it was not uncommon. I mean, it wasn't like today where you got an NXT and you got a developmental system. Your developmental system was the territories back then. So you put the guys out there and they got their experience and they worked, you know, 7 days a week, twice on Sunday. That's what it appeared they were attempting to get back to from a territory standpoint. So Brian Lee was about to gain his experience through the territories. I don't think that's when he first started, as I say all that. But at the same time, he's a very, very tall guy. You know, he's what, the second – I don't know if he – yeah, we had Jackie and Tommy. We had Jackie and Bobby with their mullets. So now we got a
boy,
Brian
that you aren't kidding here. This is mullet central. It was almost like to get into the locker room, you had to present yourself with a mullet. Jesus Christ. Horowitz has
central,
a mullet, doesn't he?
I guess kind of, sort of. His is, but his hair is curly, so it's not as pronounced. But yeah, he does, and that's the thing. Ricky Morton isn't even on this episode,
right?
so we don't even have Ricky Morton's mullet at this point.
So next,
but yeah,
well,
so
let's go to a
oh, go ahead,
let's
go, ahead.
Go to a guy who doesn't have a mullet. Next, we go to another.
Oh God, we got to talk about this. Go ahead.
And so we've got Ron Wright, who's an old man, but
Well, wait. Did we say who won the
match? Oh, I'm sorry. Brian Lee's going to get the pin here, obviously, in about a little less than 5 minutes. So these are short matches, which is fine. You know, there's some of this belief sometime when you watch a 5-minute match on Raw that back in the day everybody went 30 minutes, and that's not the case here at all.
Not on TV they didn't. House shows
right.
they went a lot longer, right. but TV matches they you know they no. And the thing about this to point out, because I know in the notes, Bear Horror, which was about 32 years old at this point, and Brian Lee was 24, 25.
And it showed in the ring.
Yeah. But Brian Lee gets the pin in 4 minutes and 39
so
seconds.
So now we go to Ron Wright, who, if you listen to things like the 605 podcast or Jim Cornette, they tell stories about Ron Wright just getting being able in that Smoky Mountain region in the 60s and 70s to generate nuclear heat. Back when you could legitimately have to fight your way out of the arena, he was a guy that apparently had to fight his way out of the arena. Later on in Smoky Mountain, they show some retrospectives and they show some Ron Wright when he was younger. And man, he was just nasty to folks. It was pretty funny. I don't know. He has perhaps the hickiest southern drawl that I've ever heard. And
oh,
I don't know
God,
that
yes.
this is a I don't know that this is a gimmick. I think this may be what he really sounds like. So what was your first impression? I would assume this is the first time you've ever seen Ron Wright. It was certainly my first experience with him to see it, even though I'd heard the stories. What was your take on it and kind of what's going on here as we go to Ron Wright?
Well, first off, Bob Cottle says, we're about to hear from legendary wrestler and legendary wrestling manager Ron Wright. And then Ron Wright proceeds in this most hickiest Appalachian Mountain southern fucking draw, tells us from a wheelchair. He's in a wheelchair, but I'm in a wheelchair because of all of my wrestling injuries. And I'm here Smoky Mountain Wrestling to recruit some wrestlers, and I'm watching them all. I need to have hip surgery, and I'm going to try to sign me a wrestler to take them to the top of the Smoky Mountain Empire. Empire, I say. This will help them be able to afford hip surgery. I'll be able to get my hip surgery when I take them to the Smoky Mountain Empire top. Bruh, if this ain't southern fucking wrestling at its finest, I don't know.
Absolutely.
What it is.
I bet you, and I can't go back because it's been a couple of months and I've watched so many episodes. And I bet you at this point in the episode, the first time I watched episode one, I was probably on the fence about what was happening. And as soon as I watched this promo, I was like, the hook was in the mouth and I was being reeled into the boat. Absolutely. this is genius stuff. And you could see with this guy 25 years earlier, or 30 years ago, he's a worker. It's just written all over his face. So let me ask you this. You see a guy in a wheelchair. You're a former wrestler or a wrestling fan. You've been watching this for over 30 years. What's your first thought when you see somebody in a wheelchair?
He's fucking working.
He's working. At some point, he's getting out of that wheelchair. The first thing noticed is that those legs aren't skinny like the people that are really in, you know, in a wheelchair. So just remember that as we keep going. It'll take a while. Here's the beautiful part about Smoky Mountain Wrestling is – not everything is revealed that hour, and not everything is revealed the next hour or even the next hour. It's an hour-long program, and there's a slow burn to this stuff. So just
– slow burn, and it's a better burn because of
right. So anyway, he's going to be trying to find him some wrestlers, and boy, that's the way he says it too. There's no W in that. It's just straight to the R, wrestler and wrestling.
He said, his exact words were, I'm in this wheelchair because of all of my wrestling injuries.
Well, maybe you'll end up in a wheelchair one day because of it too, Mike.
Jesus
so
Christ.
Next, we go back to the ring here where we're going to have a match between the Golden Boy, Joe Kazana, and one of the guys who helped found the territory, White Lightning Tim Horner. And
that's your favorite wrestler,
well,
isn't it?
Not exactly. Tim Horner is a guy that had done some brief shots in WWF, was probably – I knew who he was from doing some WCW, NWA kind of work in the late 80s. Kazana is a guy whose family had worked – had promotions in Tennessee for years and years and years. So I was a little surprised to see him out doing the JOB. Tim Horner, first of all, he's got a mullet, so he got clearance to the ring. I mean, he's okay. He can go out there. How would you describe Tim Horner's appearance to the good people in BTT land?
I don't know the best way to describe, like, appearance as far as what he did during the match or just walking out to the ring with the Garth Brooks playing. That was Garth Brooks, right?
Was it Garth Brooks?
I don't know.
That was Garth Brooks.
Okay, I took an educated guess. I had no clue because I'm not a Southern, you know, or country music listener. So, okay. So, yeah, are you talking about the match or just his look?
I'll make it easy on you. Anything you want to say about Tim Horner in general?
Okay, so, yeah, Jim, okay, well, first off, I don't know how excited Dutch and Bob were excited during this 4 minute and 26 second match, which the White Lightning, Tim Horner, gets the pin on Golden Boy Joe Cazana. Because as they're talking about people who have good wind, and Dutch starts saying how he once held his breath for 10 minutes underwater, so he doesn't have a wind problem. The biggest thing that I saw in the entire match was there was two things that just stand out to me. Tim Horner just doesn't have a captivating personality. And then when he goes to do that bridge that he does for the win, and he goes to pin the guy, it looks like it's in slow motion. And why is the guy is already pinned as Horner is taking 8 minutes to bridge himself? The ref is waiting for Tim Horner to finish the bridge, because if he didn't wait for Tim Horner to finish the bridge, he would be able to count to 50 by the time Horner bridged backwards into position. That was my thought.
Caudle then goes, "Let's watch it again on slow motion." And I was like, "Oh, I thought that was the replay." That was the slowest. I put down in my notes, that's the slowest bridge in wrestling history. That looked like if I tried to bridge somebody at my age, never having done it. You know, and I'm going to speak from watching some of these episodes. So, okay, Tim Horner is supposed to be one of your – I kind of see him as the white meat baby face, even though he's in his early 30s at this point. He is one of the good guys. He's supposed to have fire, which, God almighty, my notes here, I said, this guy makes Roman Reigns look like The Rock.
It wasn't that bad. Well, okay, I know why you're saying that, but you're basing that on something that's coming up.
Okay.
Not necessarily the match. So, but I know why you say that.
So, you know, to me, if we ever have Corny on the show, and obviously we will heap large amounts of praise upon him and his efforts in his career and bow down, one of the questions I will want to know is what his thoughts and about Tim Horner in the position he was in this promotion, because I'm not saying, all I'm saying is I don't see it. And Tim Horner may be one of my automatically leapfrogging into one of my least favorite wrestlers of all time.
And we'll get into why this is not actually what you see in this match is not why we say that, but you will see it. It's coming. Let's just say that. So, but Tim Horner gets the win in 4 minutes and 26 seconds.
With a bridge.
Slowest bridge in the history of professional wrestling.
So we leave that match and we go to a promo. Right. We go to a promo with Jim Cornette. This is some pretty standard early Jim Cornette stuff. He puts down the town, the Hillbillies, says he's a celebrity, kind of makes fun of them for getting to be able to see a celebrity. And then he starts in only for TV ready, so there's no cursing, but pretty much start shooting on, I thought, WWF and WCW about why they're going to bring back old-time wrestling, and it's not about the merch, it's not about the dolls, it's not about the TV shows you can do. Boy, Caudle looks like he's just getting a lap dance while this is going on. He's loving this. He is digging this return to wrestling. And then Corny finishes it up by saying he's going to be bringing a new tag team. He had the Midnight Express, but he needed a new team. And again, this takes a couple of weeks to do. They only have an hour. They got a lot of stuff going on. So eventually we will get to who Corny's mystery team is. And but it takes a while, and that's okay.
It takes a while. It does. But that's Corny being Corny. And I think they actually repeat. Do they repeat this promo in another episode? Maybe they do. I can't remember.
There's a lot of stuff, and we'll kind of try to keep track of it. But there's a lot of stuff that gets played week to week to week that's a repeat. And so that's why we'll be able, as we get going, to do maybe multiple episodes. Is that these episodes are an hour, then you take out the commercials, and then sometimes they show recaps and things like that. And so, you know, it does get down to a lot of times 40 to 45 minutes of original content.
Well, we're in episode two right now, and I'm wondering if we're even going to get to Smoky Mountain actual episode two, because we're steadily rolling into this thing.
All right. Well, there's a lot to talk
about. But that's okay. That's okay.
All right. So our next match, our fourth match of the first episode, we have a guy that I've never heard of, Paul Miller, and a masked wrestler, the Black Scorpion. So I always thought the Black Scorpion was a WCW thing. I tried to do some looking on Paul Miller. What didn't have much success. Don't know if this was the high water mark of his career, but Paul Miller gets the win. He did not get the entrance. Black Scorpion got the entrance. Paul Miller was just standing in the ring when we cut to the ring. Did you know who the Black Scorpion was here?
I had no clue until I researched.
Yeah, I had to do the same thing. So who was under the hood here?
Well, it's the NWO Sting.
Yeah.
That under the hood there. At least that's what they say. I mean, obviously.
Well, that guy came out and you know, most of the anonymous guys who, you know, were wrestling in the territories then didn't have a body like that.
Right, because back then, even in 91, I mean, he wasn't your bodybuilder type today. I mean, Brock would make that guy look small, let me say
that.
Right,
but in a southern promotion in front of 300 people, that guy was built.
Yeah, he had a physique in 91, and it was shocking that Paul Miller won. That was one of the things that made territory wrestling good was you got, you know, Paul Miller gets no introduction, so you got to figure, you know, he's not going to get the victory. And then all of a sudden, he gets in there and Black Scorpion gets pinned. You know what's ironic? I don't have this in my notes, but as I think about how that all went down, man, that's kind of what happened with Goldberg. He was just in the ring his very first match. You know, Hugh Morris gets his introduction on Monday Night Nitro, and Goldberg ends up getting a win. Now, I'm not comparing Paul Miller to Goldberg. What I'm saying is it's funny how you throw a surprise out that like that to people every now and then. You could help build someone and make someone, you know, a legitimate professional wrestler.
Right.
So that part, and that is something as two guys who watch Raw and SmackDown regularly, you never see. You never see that underdog person get a victory to start building someone up that no one knows, because no one knew who Paul Miller was, I would assume, at that time. We don't see that anymore, professional wrestling.
Right.
We're just starting to see some squash matches now, but we've not seen for a long time the guy surprise win when Paul Miller, who got no entrance, gets a surprise win with a small package over the Scorpion.
Yeah.
Black Scorpion, I'm sorry.
Let's go to a promo here. We've got Primetime Brian Lee. There's going to be a tournament in the coming weeks to crown a heavyweight champion. He's going to win it for the people. Thoughts on Primetime Brian Lee behind the mic?
For me, well, I just thought I know what you got to say, so I won't steal your thunder. The Dirty Dutch kind of cuts him off, and Brian Lee mentions that there's a heavyweight tournament that he's going to win before he gets cut off. And then Dirty Dutch cuts him off and tells Brian Lee he would have wrestled the match earlier against Horowitz differently, you know. And Brian Lee says, "You're right, Dutch. You would have lost," and he walks off. And then Dutch says, "You see that guy? He can't take constructive criticism." He tells Bob Caudle that, which I thought was funny. I laughed out loud watching the episode. It really was good, you know. You got a guy, and the thing was, it did look staged like you see on Raw nowadays. Dutch walks in, and because it's not scripted, as hokey as it was, it's not scripted, so it looks legitimate. Now, you have something further to add about the Primetime Brian promo. I don't want to steal your thunder.
Well, here's my notes. As I was watching the episode, I put, Jesus, Brian Lee should thank his lucky stars that Tim Horner is there, so he won't be the worst guy on the mic in the promotion. The baby faces in the first hour of TV are Horner, primetime Brian Lee, Gibson. Those are three guys that you wouldn't count on to cut a good promo if you had. Let's see what I put a corny type line in here. I said these are three guys that couldn't cut a decent promo if you had their mother at gunpoint and her life depended on it. Just those three guys, you put them together and they couldn't talk. So, I mean, there's going to be really the guy who's going to be the babyface talker for the first couple of episodes is Bobby Fulton. And so we go to the ring for the main event of the first hour or the first episode. And you've got Bobby Fulton from the Fantastics with Ivan Koloff. And so
And Ivan was 49 years
yeah,
old.
Yeah, but he still looked like he could whip your ass. Let me tell you that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was
in great shape.
Yeah.
Fulton's in his early 30s here. Man, you know, and I put a note there. I said, Koloff looks a lot better than you would think. I mean, for those of you who don't know, Koloff is a former world champion. He beat Bruno. He ended Bruno's 7.5-year run for the with the title in the 70s.
I guarantee you there's a lot of people who wouldn't know that.
So, I mean, and they said this on the 605 podcast not too long ago, but Bruno, I think it was in the Garden. The Garden went so quiet when Koloff beat Bruno that Bruno thought his eardrum popped because he couldn't hear anything.
Just shocked.
So, question I have is, I know during your wrestling career, you worked with Tommy Rogers. Did you ever meet Bobby Fulton in your travels?
I never met Bobby. I've actually exchanged messages with him recently on Twitter because I want to try to land him on our staple show, Booking the Territory Pro Wrestling Podcast, that drops every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Central Time. I haven't really officially ever met him. We met online as it is. But no, I never met Bobby. Tommy would tell stories and talk about Bobby a lot, though, obviously, because they were really, really
good friends. Would you consider him to be the poor man's Ricky Morton?
Bobby Fulton?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry. Yeah, Morton. Yeah.
Would I expect Fulton to be the poor man's Ricky Morton?
Yeah.
No, not really. Like, because when I think of the Fantastics and Tommy Rogers and Bobby Fulton, I don't know if I could assign either one of them what I would consider the Ricky Morton role.
Okay.
So I don't know. And maybe it's because I don't know. I don't know why I say that. Maybe it's because I just didn't see as much of them as I saw of Ricky and Robert, you know, coming up in Mid-South and in the NWA, as I saw of Tommy and Bobby. But that's hard. That's really hard.
Well,
to say.
During this match, Ron Wright rolls out to the ring in his
Southern fucking wrestling.
In his wheelchair to scout the talent, because remember he needs a hip operation. There is some gold here from the commentator team, Mike. What I know you were especially giggling about this earlier. What exactly did you have from our fine team of Mantell and Caudill?
Well, so this match is the longest match of the episode, and it's 6 minutes and 58 seconds. But if you're watching it on YouTube. Possibly the worst chair shot ever is at the 39 minute and 20 second mark. There are two chairs stuck together, which Ivan Koloff is outside the ring and he's about to hit Bobby Fulton. These chairs are stuck together though, and he's it's just a terrible chair shot when he hits Bobby. I can only imagine Bobby's thinking, God damn you, son of a bitch, don't hit me with these chairs like that, because I've been there. But to get to the goal, as they're fighting outside with these chairs and they're by the barricade, Bob Caudill begins to explain they're fighting by the barricade. They're fighting. I'm sorry. He didn't say barricade. They're fighting by the fence, Dutch. This thing that separates the fans from the wrestlers, to which Dutch says it's called a barricade, Bob.
And it was the delivery from Dutch that made it laugh, because I popped on that too. It was his dry delivery of the line that made it great.
Yeah, because basically he was like, it's called a fucking barricade, Bob. He just couldn't say fucking barricade on air. And then Bob Caudill says, okay, Dutch, a barricade that separates the crowd from the wrestlers, but whatever it's called, it's metal and it hurts. So
well, let me ask you this. Do you think if Michael Cole pulled that off on Monday night next week that he'd be back on the next Monday night?
Fucking Vince McMahon. God damn, pal. What is this shit? It's Lord knows what Vince wants him to call it, because you know, he's got all these standards of terminology. You can't call it the strap. You know, you got to call it the championship. What the fuck ever, dude? But anyway, you want to recap the match? I got plenty of notes.
Well,
on
you know, just to keep us moving along, at some point, Koloff leans over to the ropes. Ron Wright kind of hands him something. Koloff turns around and hits Fulton and pins him. Looks like Koloff's going to get the win. Jackie Fulton hits the ring. He starts beating on Koloff. They reverse the decision and disqualify Ivan. And as then Vladimir Koloff, who's the quote unquote cousin, hits the ring, and they break out a chain and hang Jackie Fulton over the top rope. So that's probably the most over the top Southern wrestling thing that you get in this first episode. You know, these two are solid pros, and it was a fine match. To me, this sets up the first big angle in the promotion, which will be the Fantastics versus the Koloffs. Armstrong comes out, says, can't have all this.
It's just the best part about it.
He signs Koloff $500.
Well, the thing about it was, I get a couple of notes.
You know what I mean? Go ahead.
You recapped it good, but yeah, basically, Ron Wright rolls up to the ring apron, gives Koloff something. Koloff appears to hit Bobby Fulton with something. Jackie runs into the ring. He then gets Vladimir Koloff, who, Jesus fucking Christ, I understand Nikita wasn't available, but I don't know who Vladimir Koloff is, but I hope he doesn't get too long of a run. At this point, and the whole Vladimir didn't work for me. Ivan did. They hang Jackie Fulton from the top rope with a Russian chain, which I'd like to believe if you tried to hang someone with anything at this point in time, I don't know if you could get away with it. I guess you could, but I just don't see it happen. The best part was after the break when Bob Armstrong comes out and like you said, points out that the Koloffs cheated and he's fining Ivan Koloff $500. Keep in mind, this is in 1992. And so he's going to fine him. You couldn't do that today. You couldn't come out today. I know nothing against WWE, but they could not come out and have someone go, oh, we're going to fine this wrestler for that. The fans would shit on it. However, the best part about it is the promo after
God.
Bob Armstrong, Bullet Bob, levies the fine of $500, and Bobby Fulton, I know what you got, Doc, but I got something else because I didn't see this in your notes. It said he called the Koloffs two bald-headed commie geeks.
Yeah.
And Bobby also tells Bob Wright he's going to rip Bob Wright out of the wheelchair if he does it again.
Ron Wright.
Ron Wright, I said Bob Wright. Ron Wright out of the wheelchair. But then he also, what does he say he's going to do to Ron Wright also?
He says, you mess with me again, I'm going to get you out of that wheelchair and kick you in the booty.
You know what I think? I think ass was about to slip out of his mouth as he was saying it, because he kind of like almost, I'm going to kick you in the booty. Like he almost wanted to say ass, but he just knew he couldn't because it was.
Well, and he also says we're going to kick their tails just like we did overseas on Saddam Hussein. So if you don't remember, this was our first, this was around the time of our first
Gulf
intervention
War.
Into the Gulf War, into Iraq. And so he's playing on the U.S., getting the USA chant going since they're fighting the Russians. So that feels a little bit outdated, but I mean, you could still get by with it in 19. I mean, the thing you got to realize is that in South Carolina, it was 1991, but it might as well have been 1983.
May as well have been 1860.
I don't think news of the Cold War being over had filtered down past the Mason-Dixon line at that point. So that was probably safe for them to do. So that wraps up the first episode. Lots of mullets, not a lot of high spots. A few moves off the top, but it was just solid mat wrestling. A lot of punches. That's okay.
Very entertaining, though. I mean, you can watch it in a few. I mean, if you watch the whole thing like I do, and maybe, you know, everyone who's listening to this should do, you can get through it in 50 minutes.
Yep.
You know, you could put it this way. You could watch 3.5 episodes of Smoky Mountain that it would take you, you know, 3 hours to do for Monday Night Raw.
Yep.
So you could literally get through a month's episodes of it in the same time it takes you to watch one episode of Raw.
Yeah.
So it was good, though. I mean, it was a pilot episode.
I'm going to give it, just because I know what comes later, I'm going to give it a score of 5 disability checks out of 10. If you just said that's the only hour you get, it probably bumps up into 6 or 7, but the promotion really takes off here in a little bit. So when I go back and look at it, it feels like a step back, but it's a good entry point for those of you who haven't watched it.
And what did we get? Basically, we got one Cornette promo, would you say, on
yeah.
this one? We didn't get any more than one. So we only had one Cornette promo, and we got Doc's stupid rating system of 5 disability checks out of 10. I'm not going to insult the listeners like that with the disability checks. But, hey, for a pilot episode, you're right. It's solid. It wasn't flashy, but it was solid. And I enjoyed it. I mean, it got me to wanting to see more. And it's funny because when I was watching episode 1 and I had it up on the computer – wife walks by me and looks at me like, what the fuck are you watching? Because, you know, you can tell it's a little old. Although still the production value is good to me.
Not bad.
Of that time. Yeah, it was good. But she kind of like gave me the side eye like, what the hell are you watching? So it was, look, good episode, man. Lots of mullets. Lots of mullets. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Well, we got Bobby Fulton with a mullet. We got Brian Lee with a mullet. We got, did Paul Miller have a mullet kind of? No, maybe not.
No, not really. But
Tim Horner with a mullet. Plenty of mullets to go around.
Gibson was out. I guess Gibson was out there with his mullet.
See, the thing about Gibson, though, in like guys who have curlier hair, like Barry Horowitz, it doesn't appear as – it's not as much of a mullet
okay. Because
of the curliness of it. But those dudes with the straight hair, oh, dear God, it's mullet central.
I'm going to refute that here in a minute, but okay.
Okay. Well, Doc, we're an hour into episode number 2 of our Smoky Mountain review and recap.
Let's call another audible. We're going to go ahead and close this one down. We'll be back with another episode where we go through episode 2. We really, you know, we kind of call this in the ring, just like the stars of yesteryear. We want to put this in more bite-sized chunks where people can listen to it. We followed our fishbone or our outline here but we're getting excited talking about old school wrestling. So how does it sound if we go ahead and cut this one off and pick it back up with the next episode, episode 2 with a different show?
I completely agree, man. I mean, that probably works good. We went a little longer than we wanted, but I think for the most part, we're under an hour and people would be highly entertained by it.
They'll be happy to get what they get from us. That's what I say.
Oh, shut up. Quit trying to be a heel. You're the world's first worst fucking podcasting heel. I keep telling you that. Hey, before we get out of here, though, just a quick reminder. Check us out, facebook.com/bookingtheterritory. Give us a like. Click the shop now button. Our Pro Wrestling Tees store is there. If you just want to go to Pro Wrestling Tees and get a shirt, please do so. It's prowrestlingtees.com/bookingtheterritory. Follow us on Twitter. It's @BTT_podcast. I am @Mike504Saints. Use the hashtag SMWRasslin, SMWRASSLIN. For the Smoky Mountain review shows and tell us what you think. Check us out on YouTube. Just search Booking the Territory. Our YouTube channel is there. Like I said, I got the Sam Houston interview up. I've got the One Man Gang interview up. Eric Young from old TNA star Eric Young and has done some work in NXT as well as up. So Warbeard Hanson, Donovan Dijak. We've had plenty of superstars, wouldn't you say, in the world of professional wrestling lately, Doc?
A veritable who's who in the world of wrestling.
Yeah, man. You know, we've made a name. We've done our regular show for about a year and a half now. So we've built up a really, really, really good list of people that we've had a chance to talk to. Subscribe to the show. Make sure you get each and every episode that we drop, whether it's the staple show or our main show, Booking the Territory, that we drop every Thursday night, 10 p.m. Central Time. Subscribe on Podbean, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, TuneIn Radio. You can find us all across there. Like I said, subscribe and then give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Please, on iTunes, subscribe and give us a 5-star review. You can also give us a 5-star review on Stitcher as well. And we would greatly appreciate it, man. I think that is all I got, Doc. I'm trying to remember if there's anything else. PayPal, if you want to donate to the show, you can use the PayPal link in the show notes. So if you just look at the show notes in the description of the show, there's a PayPal link. You can donate to the show. Also, we have an Amazon link that is used if you want to purchase things from Amazon. That's also in the show notes. With that link, remember, it doesn't cost you anything. And, you know, I'm not trying to steal the thunder of the 605 podcast, but I will say this. Because he's right. Brian Lass is right when he says, like, guys like JR and Steve Austin and what's his name? Chris Jericho. They got that whole, you know, Amazon thing too, Doc. But the thing is, these guys are millionaires. They don't need the pennies that we would get from people using the Amazon link. You know what I'm saying, Doc?
Does that mean you're going to start sharing?
Well, I think about it.
By all means, use those links, people.
All right, y'all. That's gonna wrap up our Smoky Mountain recap review episodes. Hopefully, you know, never know. One of these days, we'll hopefully get Jim Cornette on the show, and he will be able to contribute, and we can ask him a bunch of questions about Smoky Mountain. So, if you got questions for us about Smoky Mountain, the first couple of episodes that we've done, send them in, and we will get to them as we can. So, that's all I got, Doc. I will take it this time. We will catch you next week on our regular show that we do, Booking the Territory Pro Wrestling Podcast on Thursday nights. And then hopefully episode 3 of our Smoky Mountain Review will be out within the next coming weeks. So for Mike and Doc, you know what we always say, book it.
Hi, wrestling fans from Greenville, South Carolina's Memorial Auditorium. Welcome to another action-packed, exciting hour of Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Professional wrestling like it used to be and the way you like it. I'm Bob Caudle, and on this week's program, you're going to be seeing such outstanding stars as White Lightning, Tim Horner, Fantastics, Bobby Fulton is going to be here, as well as Primetime Brian Lee. And Mysterious Black Scorpion also is going to be here, fans. We'll be talking with two managers. We'll be talking with Ron Ward and also with Jim Cornette.
You know, I've often wondered, he was at one time the Rock and Roll Express. Why did they call them the Rock and Roll Express? Were they some kind of singers or something? What's the problem here?
Oh, yeah, I heard them one time with their rock and roll band. And, you know, fans still chant rock and roll in all of the arenas wherever they go to support Gibson. And not only that, he kicked out just a count of one. That sort of drives his opponents nuts when the fans get that rock and roll chant going.
Well, they released a record one time, and it went plywood within the first 3 weeks. It sold in excess of 75 copies, I think. And it was all on the verge of becoming sheetrock.
Kyle there. Fans, earlier today we had a chance to talk to Smoky Mountain Commissioner, wrestling great Bob Armstrong. Bob Armstrong has a lot of ideas and a lot of thoughts about what's really going to make Smoky Mountain wrestling great. We know you'd be interested in hearing that, so right now, let's hear from Commissioner Bob Armstrong.
Fans, here's wrestling legend Bullet Bob Armstrong, now Commissioner of Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Bob, you bring over 30 years of experience to this job. What can we expect from you as Commissioner?
Well, you know, I have had over 30 years of wrestling experience, and I have every trick tried on me in the book. Right. And I've always been proud of my profession. It's been good to me and my family over the years. But what I've seen in the past few years, frankly, Mr. Cottle, I don't agree with. So when Smoky Mountain Wrestling Organization called me and said, would you like to be a commissioner, I thought, what a perfect opportunity to bring back to the people wrestling as it should be, as it used to be. I mean, wrestling affordable at family prices where the whole family can right. come and enjoy wrestling like it was invented. It's the oldest sport known to man, and it's going to be treated like a sport as long as I'm here. The fines will be not light but heavy. The fines will be heavy for any infraction of the rule. There will be no over-the-top rope. There'll be no foreign object. You will not touch a referee because there's a little man in there, a little referee that may weigh 150 pounds, getting pushed around by some big 290-pound guy. Well, I still wrestle sometime, Bob, and I can push around myself. So whatever needs to be done, Smoky Mountain Wrestling is going to do it. We want to be a part of your community. We want you to be a part of us. We want your cards and letters. Tell us what you want. I'm going to do my job as commissioner. I know it's not going to be easy. Don't get me wrong.
Well, they're going to test you.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, they'll test me, but I'm up to the test. Smoky Mountain Wrestling will be the best.
Fans, there you hear it from Commissioner Bob Armstrong. It's going to be great, Smoky Mountain Wrestling. You be sure to be with us.
Fans, right now, let's take a moment to hear these words from legendary wrestling great, now a top manager, Ron Wright.
It certainly is nice to be here on Smoky Mountain Wrestling. I'd just like to tell everyone, you wonder why I'm sitting here in this wheelchair the way I am. My wrestling career for years, all of those men beating on me took a toll on me. Now I'm needing a hip implant and a knee implant, and I'm down here scouting, looking over all of these top wrestlers they have in this Smoky Mountain Wrestling area. I'm going to try to find some of the top wrestlers that I can maybe get in there and get me a contract with to where I can go out and make me some money and have this surgery that I'm needing. I'd like to just tell all of the wrestlers in this area, I'm one of the world's most famous, well-known wrestlers, and I'd like for all of them to get in there and show me what they've got, and I'm going to be looking at them, and one of these days here, I'm going to try to get someone up, get their name on a contract, and if I can get them on a contract with Ron Wright, I'll be able to have this surgery and take these men to the top in this Smoky Mountain wrestling empire. Everybody remember that, because that's what I'm here for.
Right now, let's go to Bob Caudle and Jimmy Cornette.
All right, Dutchin, thank you. Fans right here with me, of course, the Louisville Slugger himself, Jim Cornette. I guess you got to say one of the premier managers in all of professional wrestling.
You know, I know what everybody out there in television land, I know what you're saying. Jim Cornette, you're an international star. You're a celebrity. Why are you in a nothing-happening, stinking place like Greenville, South Carolina? Well, there's a couple of reasons. First of all, I realize that it's not often you people in the backwoods, you hillbillies out in the sticks, get to see a celebrity. So today I was feeling charitable. But what's more, I heard that professional wrestling is coming back.
Yes, sir.
You see, over the past couple of years, these big corporations, these major promotions, they've turned it into a circus, into a sideshow. It's not whether you can wrestle anymore. It's whether you want to wear a funny costume. It's not whether you can fight. It's whether you can sell a doll over at Toys R Us. It's not whether you got guts. It's how juiced up on steroids you are. They've turned professional wrestling into a joke, so I turned my back on them. Because I made my reputation managing the greatest tag team in the history of wrestling, the Midnight Express. And they were a team that could wrestle and would fight and would let nobody stand in their way of getting to the top and winning a title. Nobody ever gave us anything. And we wouldn't turn around and do no favors. That's why they pushed us to the side. Well, brother, coming up in the weeks to come, I'm going to be bringing a dynamic tag team to Smoky Mountain Wrestling. A team that's going to revolutionize tag team wrestling just like the Midnight Express did. Because, brother, this is the real deal. Ain't no cartoon wrestling. And Jim Cornette is going to be the king of the hill.
Fans, that's something to look for from Jim Cornette. And we'll be back right after this.